From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today is an all-music show. We'll start with Irish guitar virtuoso Shane Hennessy, who says it's always been difficult to be original, but it's even harder now.
Particularly now in this age where we've got YouTube and we've got every piece of music that's ever been recorded and written at our fingertips for free. It's so hard not to become a copy or a clone of somebody else.
Then singer-songwriter Mariel Alschwang explains what it was like creating a concept album about the life of Mary Knoll.
Bit by bit, finally, we kind of landed on a cluster of things that, as we pulled back from the canvas, actually looked like the person that we knew and loved in our imaginations.
And Matt Wild joins us for the last Milwaukee Music Roundup of 2019. Lake Effect is next, but first, the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Hearing guitar virtuoso and composer Shane Hennessy can be magical. It's technique, sure. He has that in spades. But his music goes well beyond playing lots of notes, even though Hennessy does manage to have an entire band play through just his guitar. You'll hear what we mean in just a moment. The 26-year-old was in town for a few performances in August, and he found time to stop by the Lake Effect Performance Studio to talk with Bonnie North and share some tunes with us. He starts with this original composition called Effervescence.
So wonderful. Effervescent. Shane Hennessy in the Lake Effect Performance Studio. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. You know, you play with such joy.
Yeah. It's a real passion for me.
I can tell.
Yeah.
You smile, you're in it. And the minute you started playing, you went to another place.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always tell people that, you know, I don't get paid to do concerts. I get paid to travel and eat bad food, and I do the concerts for free.
Well, that's a good way to think about it. You rack up all those airline miles.
Exactly.
Yeah. You came to the guitar rather late, although you're not that old.
No.
But you've been playing since you were four.
Yeah.
But you're so rooted in Irish traditional music.
Mm-hmm.
This tune sounded like, you know, you were paying homage to that and Chet Atkins.
Exactly.
You were channeling him a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Chet Atkins is a musical hero of mine, and I got turned on to him via discovering the music of Tommy Emmanuel. But where the Irish music comes into it for me is, I suppose I started off on the concertina when I was 4 years old. So that was my very first instrument. I learned it in school. And I was taught the concertina primarily by my teachers in school. And then when I was, I think, maybe 8 or 9 years old, I remember my dad used to bring me up to lessons every Monday night, about an hour away from where we lived in Ireland, to Micheál O'Reilly. And Micheál is a kind of a legend in the you know, Irish trad world, as kind of one of the, or if not the top concertina player in the country. So I used to go to lessons with him every Monday night. And then I suppose it was until I did that up until I discovered the guitar. I think I was about 12 years old, and I heard James Taylor in a Disney film. I think it was called Remembering the Titans, and there's a scene with a car crash in it. And you hear that famous, the... I suppose the cool thing about it for me was that it was kind of like my first experience with harmony in music, because if you think about Irish music, the way you usually hear it in a session, you hear melody and you hear rhythm. You don't actually, unless there's a guitar player or like somebody vamping chords, the traditional way of Irish music was very much melody and rhythm, and that's it. So that's the way I learned. And I wasn't into any other kind of music. You know, I wasn't listening to what my friends were listening to on the radio or whatever. I didn't like any of that stuff. All I wanted was hardcore traditional music. And so for me to hear the sound, I was like, oh my God, where are all these beautiful sounds coming from? That's really what kind of spurred me on to kind of jump into exploring what I could do on the acoustic guitar, but definitely having the roots in traditional music was like starting at a huge advantage already. I think people who come from a background where they've learned an ethnic music tradition, you know, be it any kind of musical background, you know, if it's Irish or if it's like West African music or could be kind of like Indian classical music, doesn't matter what it is. If you apply that to kind of more modern ideas, you know, taking stuff from the world of jazz or flamenco or classical, it doesn't really matter what it is. If you can bring your identity into that music, that's when you develop your own voice as a musician, because particularly now in this age where we've got YouTube and we've got every piece of music that's ever been recorded and written at our fingertips for free, it's so hard not to become a copy or a clone of somebody else, you know? And so people who get audiences and people who really move other people with their music, I think, are the people who go out to look for their own voice on an instrument. I mean, you know, you've probably heard hundreds and hundreds of guitar players, but the ones that stand out are the ones that can pick up a guitar and make it sound different to everybody else.
Yeah, it sounds like you. Like, I would not mistake that playing for anyone else.
Yeah, and that's what I strive for. I strive for that in that if you hear me on the radio or if you hear me at a festival in the background or something, you're going to go, ah, that's Shane Hennessy. You know, that's how you know somebody's got their own sound, you know.
So what do you think makes your sound different from, say, other Celtic-based guitarists, fingerstyle guitarists out there? There's a lot of fingerstyle guitarists out there doing interesting things with, you know, the entire instrument becomes a drum as well. Mm-hmm. It's percussive as well as melodic and harmonic. So what do you think your voice is?
I suppose I've drawn on so many musical experiences and I've tried to put them together in a way that I've taken the pieces I like from all those experiences and I tried to do my own thing on the guitar with them. So obviously in that first piece, Effervescent, you hear a huge Chet Atkins, Tommy Emmanuel influence. I think very much the form of my music and sometimes the kind of the melodic, kind of the prominence of the melody is definitely something that I attribute to Irish music, you know? So it's kind of like I'm in between two worlds. You know, there's the Irish and Celtic music side of me, and then there's also the kind of the finger-picking, you know, paying homage to the kind of the Chet Atkins era of playing, and I'm somewhere in the middle. And while I'm doing that, I'm also trying to bring in modern music that I like, you know, kind of these advanced jazz chord changes, or I'm trying to bring in these interesting rhythms. I think something we take for granted in Ireland when we learn music the traditional way is that we're exposed to so many difficult concepts from an early age, but we don't think of them as difficult concepts, we just do it. You know, I remember sitting in front of teachers and you'd just literally be given the letters of the notes you had to play and you just had to feel it, you just had to work it out. So when I'm playing tunes, you know, it's still in my head, I'll just take the cardboard out of here, I'm still thinking in my head, E-A-E-A-B-A-B-G-A-B-E-E-E-D-B-D-B-A-G-E-D, because that's the way we learned, you know? And that has carried on to all the rest of the music that I now play. So when I'm thinking of melodies in my head, even though I'm thinking of how I want it to feel, I'm also thinking of, oh, well, here's, you know, B, C, D, E, flow, you know. It's just something I think that has carried on since I was younger. But my original point was that we get exposed to timings like 9-8, 12-8, 7-8. You know, we have meter changes. We do modal music as well, which is not something that I ever thought about until I started applying it to jazz. And I thought, oh, this is like what we did, you know, with Irish, you know, as we call it, demixed, you know, which is not major or minor. So we get exposed to all this really difficult stuff from a young age, but we just totally take it for granted because we don't know any different.
Right, and you just absorb it and then figure out how you're using it
exactly.
In your music.
And yeah. I think that's the reason that Irish music translates so well.
Well, the next tune you're going to play for us is a perfect example of that kind of mix, because this is Arabic influences mixed with the Celtic. And this is one of your tunes,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is one of my tunes. Yeah, I wrote this after a really amazing trip to Marrakesh. And I wanted to write what I felt like was a theme tune or a soundtrack for the city. I went about finding these kind of Arabic scales or sounds on the guitar, and the tune really grew out of there. And I ended up calling my album Marrakesh, my last album, because I thought that the city itself was a good metaphor for what I do. You know, you've still got a city there that retains the cultures of all the peoples who have lived there. And I was kind of thinking, well, this is what I'm trying to do on the guitar. I'm trying to use my guitar as a canvas for all these different people who have come before me and all these musical ideas that I love. So it all tied together quite nicely.
All right. Well, Shane Hennessy in Lake Effects Performance Studio with Marrakesh. Shane Hennessy with Marrakesh and Lake Effects Performance Studio. What a fabulous tune.
Thank you. Thank you so
fabulous
much.
Fabulous tune. You were getting some of those quarter tones in there in that Arabic scale, as well as, I have to say, when you get into the more rhythmic part of it, I was thinking, oh my God, that could have been on a Led Zeppelin album.
Yeah, exactly. Kashmir and all that kind of
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. It was like, okay, I know what he's been listening to. Well, it's not just guitar players.
Not at all.
Although
no,
Jimmy Page is a good one to listen to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I remember listening to his version of Bertie Ansch's Black Waterside. I can't remember what he called it on the album, but I remember myself and a friend of mine sitting down in front of the CD player trying to work out what he was doing, you know, back before YouTube existed. I suppose a couple of things going on in that tune that are kind of sort of invisible unless you're looking for them. So for example, as you said, like with the quarter tones and stuff like that, that's something that I really got interested in. But obviously with the guitar and the way that the system works that with the frets, you can't really get those quarter tones without bending to them, you know. So I found another way of getting them to was literally just before I hit certain chords by bending the guitar neck outwards like that and then bending it back up. And it's only a very, very subtle effect, but that's what gives Marrakesh its sound. When I hear people on YouTube doing covers of that tune, you know, they get the chords down perfectly and stuff, but it doesn't feel right. And the reason it doesn't feel right is you need to put in those extra little kind of the details that I have in there to make it sound, to give that more Arabic sound. You know, I want it to feel like we're out in the desert, you know. Even things like popping out certain notes. I know in the middle of it when I come back from the here, you know, and it's only a little, and it sounds strange on its own, but in context, stuff like that is what sets an arrangement or a piece of music apart, say me playing it to somebody else, and it's because I'm looking for that detail. That's what I'm focused on. You know, I've practiced it to the point where I could probably play the tune and still do the interview with you here, but that's what I'm focused on when I'm playing.
So when you're writing tunes, you alluded to it a little earlier about, you know, thinking about melodies and pulling all of that together. What is your process?
I suppose I'm a bit different to other guitar players in that when I start writing any kind of music, the guitar is nowhere near me. Absolutely nowhere. And the reason is that I figured out very early on that if I wrote on the guitar, A, it sounded like I was writing a guitar tune as opposed to a piece of music. And B, my hands wanted to do what they already knew how to do. So I wanted to cut that process out totally. So when I start with a piece of music now, it's often me. I could be walking down the street, I could be in the shower, I could be anywhere, and I'll just start singing to myself, or I'll start beatboxing or whatever. It doesn't really matter what it is. Anything that I can use to get an idea out or to kind of develop upon an idea, I will use. And I'll use the voice memos on my phone. So, you know, I mean, if you took out my phone now and listened to the voice memos, you'd probably want to put me into the asylum. But it makes sense to me. And I can then use those to refer back to and think, oh, that's what I was thinking. And I try and put things together. Sometimes I'll use a program like Logic on my laptop. Sometimes I'll write it down in plain English on a piece of paper. And then when I feel like I've got enough of a grasp of what I want it to sound like, what the main themes are, then I'll bring it to the guitar. And I try to do a guitar arrangement of that piece. So that's
so much fun.
Yeah, that's the process, you know. So I'm not thinking like a guitar player. I'm trying to think like a band leader. I'm trying to think, if I had four musicians in the room, what would I get them to do right now? And how accurately can I represent that on the guitar or try to recreate that dynamic? You know?
And you don't have to feed the other three guys.
Exactly, yeah.
It's great. You go on tour by yourself.
Can you imagine how much money I'm saving right now?
Amazing. That's a wonderful way to go about it. Uh-huh. Because like I'm going back to what you said earlier, is you want to write a song, a tune, and then do an arrangement of it for yourself.
Yeah. I think that's the way to do it. I mean, I've tried before to write on the guitar, but the problem is then you get locked into the same shapes, and I know this lick, I can stick this in here, and, you know, it's not a good way to write, because I don't think you challenge yourself. There's often things that I come up with and I go, how am I going to do this? Oh, God, I've really backed myself into a corner here. But, I mean, that's how you improve. That's how you get better as a musician. And even from a technical point of view, sometimes you come across something and you go, oh, no, here we go. You know, this is the hard part. But you've got to practice it up. And ultimately, it makes you a better musician approaching the guitar that way. You know, and at the end of the day, I'm not trying to appeal to guitar players. I'm trying to appeal to everybody. You know, Chet Atkins always said, I'm not playing to the guitarists, I'm playing to their wives. And it was the truth. It was the truth. He didn't care about whether what he was playing was the most technical, difficult thing, or if it was something simple. As long as the music came out, the way he wanted it to feel, well, then he'd done his job. And I think it's the same thing with me. If the music feels right and you know nothing about fingerstyle guitar playing or the solo guitar approach or whatever, that doesn't matter. If you've had a good time and you enjoy it, that's my job done.
What are you going to take us out with?
So years ago in Ireland, my grandfather had a big band. And there was a huge kind of show band, dance band scene in Ireland. And so I grew up listening to a lot of the music that he would have played in the house. And so he was a huge Glenn Miller fan. So I remember shortly after he passed away, I remember hearing American Patrol again for the first time in a long time. And I thought, you know, this would be a really good one to arrange for the guitar. You know, good melodic tune, good chord changes, has all the ingredients for a good arrangement. So I'm going to play that American Patrol by Glenn Miller.
Irish guitarist and composer Shane Hennessy takes us out with his arrangement of Glenn Miller's American Patrol. He was in Milwaukee back in August and he performed for us then. You can hear full versions of the song Hennessy played in studio at WUWM.com. We'll take a short break now and then Milwaukee singer-songwriter Marielle Alschwang performs some music from her latest album, which is based on the life and art of Mary Knoll. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. It's been dubbed the Witch's House. Urban legends portray the former owner and creator as a loner, shut up in her home, creating the concrete statues that now adorn the yard. But artist Mary Knoll was no witch. She was a prolific artist, an innovator, and a caring friend. That's what attracted Marielle Alschwang to her work. The singer-songwriter found herself enamored by the folklore surrounding Knoll's life and the artwork she created, which inspired Alschwang's new album, Procession of a Day, The World of Mary Knoll. The singer-songwriter describes the album as a portrait of Knoll through the eyes of her group, Marielle Alschwang and the Visitations. This is their song, Built to Bloom, Procession Aria.
Crushed at dawn, descend at the wall. It will come back to me in forms that I can't yet see.
Built to Bloom and Procession Aria from Marielle Alschwang. She's joining us now in studio along with guitarist Adam Krause. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
So your new album, it's called Procession of a Day, The World of Mary Knoll. So we have to start here. Who is Mary Knoll?
She is an artist who lived from 1914 to 2001, who actually grew up in Milwaukee and for most of her life had a home right off the shore of Lake Michigan. It's actually still there in Fox Point, Wisconsin, and created an artist-built environment at that home. So it's just sprawling with artworks inside and outside, made of all kinds of different materials that she found or salvaged and saved and transformed all through various media that you can think of, from painting to ceramics to wire mesh figures to woodworking to cement sculptures, where she mixed the cement herself from the sand right off of the lake. So prolific is an understatement. And we also may know her through the Mary L. Knoll Fund that the Greater Milwaukee Foundation grants to artists here in Milwaukee. So she's pretty legendary on a couple different levels, many levels.
What did you find so inspiring about, you know, not just her work, but also her life?
I identify as an artist myself, and she said once that her art identifies her. And there's all kinds of intersectionalities and hybridities that we bring along with us, but the fact that she had this really visible autonomy and was so devoted to her work and exercised her will upon the world in this really, what I find, you know, now in the modern sort of global context to be a sustainable and, you know, pro-environmental ecological way is heroic and really inspiring.
For people who haven't seen her work specifically, how would you describe it?
That's a really good question because I think it has some similarities to other. It's definitely unique to her. She had her own sort of lexicon, visual lexicon that included what she called spooks and giant fish and dinosaurs and all these sort of whimsical, visionary things. Also, a really uncanny character that crops up in groups, almost like a mushroom patch or something. These figures with bowler hats, still don't know exactly what that is. And just sort of floating figures in boats. I think she was also really influenced by seeing the lake every day. But, you know, as an aesthetic, I do see similarities between her work and other Wisconsin-based artists. There's this sort of Midwestern visionary aesthetic that I don't exactly think is, you know, everybody getting together and like, let's draw this way. You know, let's all have hybrid humanoid creatures or something. But I don't know, maybe there's just something about this place that inspires a certain look to the work.
The folklore, the shared community.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, and there's a lot that I had discovered about Mary Knoll as sort of a more social person. Like, you know, she did have parties with other artists there. One of whom I weirdly recognized in a picture as being an artist that was like friends with my grandparents or something. And then I could see like, oh yeah, like this profile, this, you know, just the line from this drawing by this artist kind of resembles this one that she created. So yeah, we do share a lot of information, maybe tacitly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell me about this next song, Newsletter. How does it relate to Mary Knoll and her life?
Yeah, so this one is about, or actually directly taken from the mimeographed letters that I told you about. The John Michael Kohler Art Center has tons of them, and we were only able to look at a few, but I just picked out one and kind of pulled a William Burroughs on it. So it's a cut-up of one newsletter. Yeah, all of the words are hers.
Nice.
Good new friends. shakes me. Even I do.
Newsletter by Marielle Alschwang. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You know, when I thought about this album and when I started listening to you, I had to wonder, what was it like writing songs for this? Because in some ways, having a concept and having a theme, they can feel both limiting and freeing.
Yes. We're huge subscribers of that philosophy. I see Adam. Yeah.
We do like limitations. They help, but they can be very confusing too. We did a lot of the reading and research together, and then I remember we had a giant sheet of paper, and we wrote Mary Knoll in the center with a circle, and then made a giant Venn diagram with the themes working out from her name, and then sort of started picking like how we want to handle the narrative of this one person's life and what are the things that are important to us. Because there's, I mean, the Kohler was telling us they have something like 6,000 pieces by her in their collection. Like, she's prolific beyond belief. She lived a very long time. She traveled everywhere. Like, there's so much you could say about her that, you know, picking sort of a thread and making a narrative and picking out themes of our own around that narrative was kind of the first challenge. And then once we did that, we said, you know, there were a couple songs that had already, that were just sort of wrote themselves, and then we needed some more. And so we sort of picked like, well, we need to talk about this because we'd like to, and we'd like to talk about this. And then sometimes writing about a theme can be easy, and sometimes it can be very difficult.
Yeah, it was sort of like a 5-year-long process of painting someone's portrait. Recently, in the past month, I kept thinking about like Gertrude Stein, or some, like her portraits of objects and people and how fractured or fractal it can be. And as Adam said, very much us being aware that it's from our perspective, it's the things about her that we find important. And I think that was very grounding, because it can be overwhelming to think about Mary Knoll as a figure who's impacted so many people, and everybody has their own memories, whether it be, you know, being a teenager and like driving past her house, or I just met someone who is a student, an art student of hers, because she taught public school for a little while, and obviously people who had met her and spoken with her and written about her and are stewards of her work still. So yeah, if we were researching not just Mary Knoll's life, but also delving into the themes that were orbiting around this central subject. And every time something seemed like a really urgent thing to say about her, then that's where like a song would come and we would start trying to flesh it out. So bit by bit, finally, we kind of landed on a cluster of things that, as we pulled back from the canvas, actually looked like the person that we knew and loved in our imaginations.
What were the things that you really wanted to include in this? When you did take a step back, what were the things that you said, this has to be a part of this? This is such a part of her.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I wanted to get across was the collaborative aspect of Mary Knoll, to sort of demystify this idea of her as the witch, this like reclusive figure, and sort of bring a lot of love into it. I just wanted to dump as much love into this bucket that we were churning our songs into as much as possible. And friendship and also collaboration with her natural environment. That was something that struck me immediately when I went to her home and was sort of exploring her work initially years ago. You know, the driftwood and the sand and the lake and the sounds and the light coming through and all of these sort of stained glass mobiles and things that she made. What is this sort of like essence, and how can exploring Mary Knoll be a vehicle of that process, I guess, as a creative person? That was a really long answer to the first one. But also, you know, while I'm on the subject of the artistic process, there's a song that was the last one that we had written, and it's the last one in our song cycle, called Turning, and it's about why we chose Procession as the title, this sort of ongoing cyclic force around a central axis. But in that song, it's sort of more of a metaphor, I guess, for kind of reaching this point, this back and forth, or this ongoing cycle of, is this any good? Why am I doing this? Why does it look different now than it did yesterday? What's compelling me to make these adjustments? Or when will I finally, you know, accept it as being finished? Like, Mary Knoll never signed a painting because she was never finished with anything, you know? And I think a lot of us can relate to that. And ironically, the song that addressed that ended up being sort of our, well, I guess we're done now in the process of writing this project. But I think that is also definitely something that we wanted to get across, in addition to many other more biographical anecdotes and themes.
Would you like to play that for us?
Oh, sure.
Turning?
Yeah. Before you start, I would just like to say, Marielle, Adam, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work with us.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you about it.
Sometimes I think I've made my mark. For now, before the fire dims to dust, an ignition in the heart, a spark in the mind, a desire to climb from the ashes of the last time.
Local singer-songwriter Marielle Alschwang playing her song Turning from her latest album Procession of a Day, The World of Mary Knoll. She was joined by guitarist Adam Krause, and we first spoke with them in September. We'll take one last break, then Matt Wild joins us for the last Milwaukee Roundup of 2019. Lake Effect returns in just a moment on WUWM.
To a space which might be infinite, and to a call.
More of Lake Effect now on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers. Matt Wild is one of the co-founders of Milwaukee Record, which he and fellow co-founder Tyler Moss describe as an online source for music, culture, and gentle sarcasm. And among the many cultural things Milwaukee Record keeps track of is a nearly exhaustive list of new music from local musicians. Matt is the curator of that list, and since August, he's joined Lake Effect at the end of the month to share with us a sample of what he's been listening to. We call it Milwaukee Music Roundup, and Matt joins Lake Effect's Bonnie North in the studio for their final roundup of 2019.
Hello, Matt Wild. It's great to see you.
Well, hello. It's great to be seen. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's as always. And we have reached the end of 2019.
How about that?
How about that? It is the 31st of December, and we're going out with a bang. We've got some really good music this month.
Lest you think the Milwaukee music scene, take some time off in December. They do not.
They don't.
The scene just keeps on trucking.
Yeah. So you've got some really good things to share this month. Starting again, I know two of the four bands, and this is not one of them.
Oh,
Reyna.
Oh wow, Reyna. I'm surprised.
I don't, and I'm ashamed to admit that.
No, that's all right. Well, let me fill you in on the wonderfulness that is Reyna. Reyna is two sisters, Victoria and Gabriella. And they've been playing for about 8 years now, I would say. They were previously known as Vic and Gab.
I know them as that.
There we go.
There
yes.
we go. Okay. They I thought the voices sounded familiar to me.
Yep. They've been around, I think, yeah. I think their
they
first
played
album
in the studio.
Was probably like 2012 or something like that. They released a couple records as Vic and Gab. And they were kind of this like bouncy, jangly indie pop. And around 2016, I think, they rebranded themselves as Reyna, which I believe means queen.
It does.
And they've kind of refashioned themselves into this very glittery, very high production kind of dance pop, electro dance pop.
I was going to say synth pop.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, they're fantastic at it. And like I said, they've been doing this for about 3 years now. They've been Reyna and have yet to release a quote-unquote proper EP or LP. But they have released a handful of singles, and each one is just more fantastic than the last. And it's at this point, you know, they're just kind of like, you feel like they could kind of toss off these big, giant electro songs like in their sleep. They've gotten so good at it. And so the latest one that they just released that we'll be listening to is called Clueless. I believe it takes a little of its inspiration from the 90s film Clueless, Alicia Silverstone. And like I said, like their previous releases, this is a big, bold, high production song. And at this point, like I said, they're just tossing these off left and right. So I think they do plan to have a quote unquote proper release in 2020. So look for that. In the meantime, here's Reyna with Clueless.
I know I let you down. Sorry.
Reyna, for Lake Effect listeners who know them as Vic and Gab, because we've had them in the studio before, that's who they are, Reyna with Clueless. And it's just very catchy and wonderful stuff.
Yep. And, you know, if you want to see them live, they do play out often, so look for their name.
Well, this next band you have is another one who's played in the studio in some iteration or other, and that is Field Report.
Field Report, yes.
Yeah.
Christopher Porterfield as the main driver behind Field Report. And a very always moving forward, always kind of reinventing himself just a little at a time. I think that's always been fascinating about Chris and what he's doing. And the end of 2019 has been pretty busy for him. He released two EPs that had songs from his previous LP as Field Report. That name of that LP was Summertime Songs. And that was this very big, glossy, very lush production, and now he's released two EPs of very pared-down acoustic versions of songs from that album, which, depending on my mood, you know, it's sometimes I prefer the big production, sometimes I really do like these two new EPs that he's released.
This is kind of stripped down.
This is very
stripped
down. And now, on top of that, not to be outdone, he's started his kind of launched his own record label, which these EPs are part of, and he's released a brand new song, which will be the one we'll be listening to now. It's called Breathe, And this is different, again, just a little bit different from, it's not the super glossy production, it's not completely stripped down, but it's definitely a Field Report song, but with all these kind of very strange jazzy flourishes kind of tossed in there. There's some saxophone, there's some percussion. It's really, really interesting. Who knows if this is pointing the way toward what he'll be up to in 2020, but I hope so, because I really do like this track. And it's a Field Report with Breathe.
You try to reason with the bolted door. When you get lost in your mind at night, who you are and were before, know that I tried to get you back inside, but my keys don't unlock.
Chris Porterfield, otherwise known as Field Report, with a brand new tune called Breathe. And yeah, you're right, that is not like anything else I've ever heard him perform.
Yeah, and like I said, one of the things I really like about him is always kind of tweaking the formula a little bit. And he's another musician that's been around now since, oh, for quite a while. I think probably 2012 was the first Field Report record, too. So it's great to see him kind of constantly moving forward.
Yeah. Well, now here comes the band that it turns out the only one I didn't know in the list, and that is Brat Sounds.
Brat Sounds, yes.
And they're great.
Oh, good. Yes.
I really love this tune.
I'm glad you enjoy the Brat Sounds. And it's not Brat Sounds, which I think I spent a couple of years calling them Brat Sounds. It is not Brat Sounds. It's Brat Sounds. This is a band that kind of rose from the ashes of an old band called Dinny Bulka, who were around a number of years ago. Brat Sounds released their debut LP in 2014, I think. Then they had a follow-up in 2015. And then they've been quiet for a few years. And now suddenly at the end of 2019, here they are again after recording some new tracks in the basement of the lead singer's place. His name is Scott Carey. And they have a new record. It's called Bad Luck. And this is the kind of indie rock record that doesn't get a lot of attention these days. It's easy to overlook something like this because there's nothing, terribly exciting about the production. There's no exciting backstory about it. It's just a couple guys with some guitars got down in the basement and wrote some terrific songs. And I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for that. And
the song
we're going to listen to, I'm just a sucker for these kind of just slow, kind of sad, kind of almost kind of miserable songs that just make me feel sad.
But beautifully miserable.
The song we're going to listen to is called Motor Trend. And yeah, this is, I think, the song that is currently scoring my kind of the end of the year, winter, just kind of bleak, but it's sad, but beautiful and lovely. So yeah, it's called Motor Trend. The band is called Brat Sounds. The album is called Bad Luck.
I can see me in your motor trend, or I can see you on the battlefield. I can see the fading in your eyes.
Brat Sounds with Motor Trend from their new album, Bad Luck. And, I love how sort of lo-fi it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got this kind of, there's just a little bit of an edge in the recording process and what they did. And it's a great song.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's definitely has a DOI feel. Like I said, recorded in the basement. I believe the band members kind of traded off instruments. Whoever was good at whatever instrument for that particular track, they just went with that. So very DIY feel.
Very cool. Well, we're wrapping up with a blast from the past. Very, very different from the sound of Brat Sounds. And that's the Haskells. And anyone who grew up here and is of a certain age will know who they are.
Yes, this is definitely stretching the definition of new Milwaukee music.
Exactly, because I asked you before we turned on the mics, I said, wait, are they back together? And you said no.
No.
No, they're not.
This is the long-lost full-length album from a Milwaukee punk band, the Haskells. It was recorded in October 1979, so about 40 years ago, and was never released, was just kind of sat in a vault somewhere and gathered dust. The band broke up soon after this was recorded. I'm not even sure this was ever intended to really be a record. It just kind of, the tapes just sat there for 40 years until a legendary, in his own right, Milwaukee musician and music writer, Clancy Carroll. He was the one that really put a lot of effort into cleaning this all up, to saving this, basically, to finding it, to restoring it, put a lot of work into making it, listenable. That this, you know, it's not demos, it's not just this rough thing, it's this, you know, relatively polished record that sounds like it could have been released in 1979. It could have been a new record at the time. And even the album cover, which, you know, looks like it was released back then.
It does. It looks, they're young and they're standing. It's a certain kind of photo that was on albums a lot.
Yeah. So yeah. It's this pretty incredible blast from the past. This is a band that ever since I've been in Milwaukee, I've always heard of. People have talked about all the time. And a band that I really didn't know a lot about, you know, what they sounded like, because I think at least the original lineup had maybe one single release, like a 45, and that was it. So this is a big find and a big lost gem. And hats off to Clancy for putting this together. And it's just a terrific listen. So if you're interested in the history of Milwaukee music, if you're interested in the history of punk music, this is just a hidden gem that has been unearthed. And the song we're going to listen to, very appropriately, is called Liberace Is Coming.
The Haskells, from 1979, Liberace Is Coming. And yes, perfect for New Year's Eve. What a great way to wrap up 2019.
Yeah, some new stuff, some old stuff.
That's new.
All over. Yeah, some old that's new again. It's new is old is new. It's there you go.
So there you go. Well, Happy New Year, Matt Wild.
Well,
and
you.
I am looking forward to continuing this in 2020. Whatever is coming up in January, I know it's going to be great. So
well, thanks for having me this year. And this is great. And yeah, looking forward to 2020.
Matt Wild is the co-founder of Milwaukee Record. Every month he publishes his Milwaukee Music Roundup, and he talks with Lake Effect's Bonnie North about a few of those songs. You can find Wild's full list at WUWM.com. And that's today's edition of the show. I'm Joy Powers, wishing you a very happy new year. And if you're out tonight, be safe. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Lake Effect has the day off tomorrow, so we can bring you the Capital Steps New Year special. We'll be back on Thursday at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. It's 11 o'clock, and stay tuned. Fresh air is next.